Okay, so we will, I will formally open the special meeting of the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority on January 5th at 10:30 a.m. Central Time. So just to start out, welcome and happy New Year. Good morning. This is a special meeting to talk about Project 11 and a couple other items, but I just wanted to make sure, I'm sure everybody on this call, the 80 participants that I see, know that we got a really nice Christmas gift from Congress with the passage of WERDA 2020. The Houston Ship Channel expansion, or Project 11, was included in that. We're very excited about that. And if you haven't seen the video that our staff put together with a lot of interesting folks on it, including politicians and governors and what have you, talking about the importance of Project 11 and the team that it took to get this done. Hurdles are, we got more hurdles in front of us. We're going to talk about those hurdles today, but WERDA 2020 was a massive hurdle to get through. And we're really appreciated that. I want to give a big shout out to our Project 11 team and to the Project 11 team support teams, our frontline workers every single day out there on the docks and at the terminals, all of our fire and police folks that support our safety in the area, and of course all our administrative teams. And I think as Clyde so eloquently said earlier on the last in the compensation committee, it's a team effort. One department isn't better than another, and they all support each other. If we didn't need the department, we wouldn't have it, right? So it's a really important hurdle that we went through, but it was a team effort, and I just want to make sure that I say again, thank you for the team that did that. The other, I also want to thank industry. I know there's a bunch of industry people on. We spent a lot of time with industry, with the port community, trying to push Congress to get what we needed done in the WERDA bill, and their help was very important and key. Also want to thank commissioners. I know that you guys worked hard and long and spent lots of time in Washington pre-pandemic and lots of time on Zoom calls and WebEx calls and what have you with different folks that need to be pushed in the right direction to get this thing done. So I just think it's a great team effort, and it shows that Port Houston is about getting things done and moving, commerce forward and creating jobs long term. So with that, let's move to item C, which is approval of the minutes. And now this one is kind of an interesting one, because the minutes of the dredge task force was December 10th, and I was not here in December 10th, neither was of 2018, and there was a few of the other commissioners, I think Wendy and Cheryl. And so I can get a motion from a commissioner that was at the meeting.
I move, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, the commissioners that were at the meeting, do I hear any negative votes? Okay, I hear no negative votes, and the commissioners that weren't at the meeting, I believe, are going to abstain, and so the motion passes. Roger, you're up for executive report.
Yes, good morning and happy New Year to everyone. We do begin 2020 with a fresh start and a lot of new opportunities. Certainly included in this, it's something we want to talk about today. It's the Houston Ship Channel Deepening and Widening Project, we call Project 11. And during the holidays, as Rick mentioned, we achieved a monumental milestone. And Congress authorized the project, and the president ultimately signed off on the bill. And after many years of working through this and a lot of hard work by a lot of members on our staff with the Corps of Engineers, our partner in this project, it was a great achievement, but there's still a lot to do as we come closer to the start of construction and ultimately completion of deepening and widening of what is now the number one port in the country, not just in foreign tonnage, but in total tonnage. So it's appropriate that obvious that it's a significant project and something that we're looking forward to. The intent of the meeting today is have this special meeting to update you, the commissioners, and our guests, as we periodically do. We hadn't done it since 2018, and have a few more members, obviously. But we want to talk about where we're at, what our next steps are, and what the roadmap is to get there. So we'll discuss things today in the presentation that include what our current progress is, what our procurement strategy is moving forward, our environmental stewardship for the project, some of the financing options, and even the industry funding update that we last heard from in February. So there's a lot to share, commissioners, but I encourage your questions and discussions as we go through this presentation, and just to update you where we're at and highlight some of the challenges and opportunities that we have on the path ahead. We do have the one item in F1, as Rick mentioned, that we'll do first, and then following that in public comments, which we have some guests from our environmental community here today, which again, we're going to continue to work with as we move forward, not just on this project, but for sustainability in general with port facilities and things that we can do to continually improve as we move forward. So after those public comments, Rich Burns and Tim Finley will begin making the presentation. And again, it's for discussion and comment as we move through this. So I'll leave it at that and turn it back to you, Rick.
Okay, great. Thanks, Roger. Commissioners, do you have any questions for Rogers? Roger, you want to make any comments? Okay, moving on then to item E, which is public comment. And before we start, we have three folks that have signed up to speak. If anybody else wants to speak, you need to email or text Eric Erickson, and we'll put you on the list. The program here is we're going to have 3 minutes, and then Eric is going to manage that time. So please manage your time, and then we'll have Q&A after the speaker speaks if commissioners want to ask questions. So we'll start out with Adrian Shelley, who's the director of Texas Office of the Public Citizen. So Erica, can you make sure, or Kelly, I'm sorry, make sure that that Adrian Shelley is unmuted.
Yes, sir, he is.
I think I'm good. Can you hear me?
We can, man. See you too.
All right, great. Well, thank you all. Appreciate the meeting and the opportunity to deliver comments today. Want to start by congratulating the port on the award of funding for the project. We look forward to seeing the project through and to the economic benefits that it will provide to the region. Also want to thank especially a number of you, Mr. Gunther, Mr. Campo, and others for the time that you've invested in meeting with the environmental community in recent months, the Healthy Port Communities Coalition, Environmental Defense Fund, and others of us that you have met with in recent months. We really recognize and appreciate that investment of your time and your effort on behalf of the communities around the port. So really want to recognize that and thank you all for that. We have made extensive comments about Project 11 over the last couple of weeks and months. We appreciate the project and the need for it, but we also want to recognize the environmental impact that project is going to have. The best estimates that we've seen suggest that we will see an additional 1,330 tons of nitrogen oxide pollution as a result of that project. NOx is an ozone precursor, and this comes in an ozone non-attainment area. And so to us, it seems evident that we're going to need mitigation of those additional emissions in order to work our area toward ozone attainment. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, while it has approved the project, has made recommendations for NOx and other air pollution reductions that should be undertaken. There was a recent op-ed from the port in the Houston Chronicle in which the port said that it would take some of the TCEQ recommendations and implement them. We think that's a great idea. We appreciate that. There were not specifics in that op-ed, and we'd like to know, first of all, specifically which recommendations from the TCEQ the port intends to implement. TCEQ did recommend the purchasing of NOx credits to offset those additional 1,330 tons. You know, we think NOx credits is one option. Obviously, it would adequately offset the emissions. But we also think that a direct investment in pollution reductions is another strategy, and a strategy that would provide, you know, direct and quantifiable pollution reductions. There are some very large vessels that are going to be used in this project. There's a 5,000 horsepower tug. There's a 5,000 horsepower barge. Both of which will be, you know, operating in the port and emitting pollution throughout the life of the project. You know, some direct investment to eliminate those pollution reductions makes a whole lot of sense. And we think that, you know, if the port would just go ahead and find a way to mitigate or eliminate those pollution reductions, quantify those reductions and their costs and put that into the project, that makes a whole lot of sense to the region.
Mr. Shelley, your time's up now.
All right. I've got just one or two more things I'd say if you just give me about 20 more seconds.
I'll leave that to Rick.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Just want to say, you know, we know that there's going to be increased efficiency from this project, but there's also going to be induced demand from the project. You know, this is just like a highway project where we hear that building more roads is going to cut traffic. And what we actually find is that we get more traffic on those bigger roads. So we'd really like to see, you know, in future emissions inventories and future clean air strategy plans, a measure of the efficiency against the induced demand, the increased growth. You know, we'd like to see year to year how this project actually affects demand, traffic, efficiency, pollution, all of that. So again, want to really thank you all for the effort that you've put in on behalf of the communities in the area. And we'd like to see that effort carried forward. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And we do appreciate you meeting with us and putting out specific proposals that we can evaluate. Any commissioners, do you have any comments or questions? Looks like one of you are trying to mute.
No, I'm good.
Okay, good. All right. Okay, so if there's no other comments, our next speaker is Juan Flores, Community Outreach Coordinator for the Air Alliance. So Juan, hopefully you're unmuted. I see you there.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
All right. I'm Juan Flores. I work for Airlines Houston, but I live in Galena Park. Been here since I was 4 years old. I live a couple of blocks away from the dredge site here in Galena Park. So I just had a couple of questions concerning for this project. I know I've seen a lot of activity up in the dredge site the last couple of months, and I saw a bunch of trucks that are parked up there right now. Is this activity going on in the dredge site right now? Is that part of Project 11, or is that like the prep work for it, or is it like just what y'all doing? That's the question I wanted to ask. Also, for this Project 11, once it takes off, is it going to be like a lot more busier up here at this site than it is now? Is there going to be a lot more activity, a lot more traffic is scheduled to go through there? And I know recently we just opened up a trail in that area, so a lot of people walk that trail up and down. With Project 11 kicking off here soon, or if it is already kicked off, is that going to like shut down the trail, or is there going to be some safety features in place to make sure that it's going to be safe with the traffic and all this activity going on there? I know we have a lot of kids who walk between Galena Park and JC who go to school, and so there's a lot of foot traffic that goes through that area on both sides, on Holland and on Mercury. So I was just trying to see if what safety features are going to be in place to make sure nobody gets hurt if the activity is going to really pick up in the area. And then also safety wise, have you guys been able to inform the community on what's going on, if there's going to be a big increase in traffic out here Is there something we can do to inform the communities of Galena Park and JC of the upcoming project and how much busier it's going to get up here? And those are the questions I have.
Okay, so that's four questions. Roger, do you think we need, can Rich talk to some of these, or do you want to, however you want to do it?
Well, yeah, just thank you, Mr. Flores. You know, we were excited to do that project with Galena Park over there for the sidewalks. I don't know if some of those trucks and stuff were related to the construction or whatever. I Project 11 hasn't started yet. I could imagine that, you know, some of the activity going on there, if there's dredging activity or disposal activity, it is in relation to the normal maintenance dredging that goes on. You know, the Corps may be doing some work over there in the construction of the levees in preparation for future dredge disposal, whether it's maintenance or what have you. Good questions about, you know, activity and safety, and we certainly will be out front and, you know, informing the community if there's any additional traffic or whatever, and take whatever measures that we need to as far as safety on those type of projects. But again, none of this is related to Project 11 yet. There's always ongoing maintenance to the channel and in various disposal areas. But again, I think some of it was with the sidewalk project, which should be completed by now.
Just generally, what I would say is, you know, we have a Port Commission Community Advisory Council meeting on the 25th of January. And what, as part of this whole Project 11 rollout, ultimately, we obviously need to have very specific communications to the community about what's going to happen and when it's going to happen and how it's going to be impacted. And hopefully we can get some good feedback from the advisory council on how we can, you know, create this outreach to make sure that we are being very, very good stewards, you know, of the community during this project. The worst thing that can happen is, you know, for people not to know what's going on and then have things that really impact kids and trails, things like that. So I appreciate your questions. And that meeting, I think, is at 9 o'clock or something like that on the 25th, you can see, and you're welcome to.
Rich, did I, sure. Did I miss anything as far as activities going on over there in Galena Park?
Yeah, just to address Juan's question about safety of school children, that trail is in place. It was designed with ongoing operations in mind, and ongoing operations means dredge effluent is poured into the inside of our dredge material areas. So you really wouldn't see that from outside of the berm. And then for occasional maintenance on the berm itself, there will be trucks crossing, I think, at the southeast corner. The trail was designed to accommodate those truck crossings as they happen on occasion. So it won't be affecting the, you know, the main trail sidewalk project.
Thanks, Rich. Yep.
And that would be on the Mercury side. On the is there any precautions on the Holland side, or I guess there's enough space there that it doesn't affect it too much?
No. The trucks would just come off the road. They drive up on the corner. There's like a little trail that gets them up on top of the berm. And obviously they won't be crossing there when, you know, a pedestrian is present. That's really kind of at the end of the trail. So it's really not the main use area for the school children anyway.
So traffic will be increased a lot once this thing's at its peak, right? More likely, there'll be a constant flow of trucks going through there, more likely?
Yeah, only if the levees were to be raised, and I don't know that there's a plan for that particular area to be raised anytime soon. So.
All right, and the last thing, I didn't get to ask it, but what precautions are being taken with the dirt that's being taken off in the channel to make sure it's safe and not contaminated, anything like that?
So every cubic yard of dredge material is tested to rigorous federal standards before it is allowed to be placed in the federal placement areas. And if it's not eligible to go there, it's put someplace else. That's been the practice since we started dredging the ship channel.
Any idea how high this thing is going to get once you get done, or is there's no way of knowing how much higher the hill's going to get, right?
I think most dredge areas have a additional lift of 5 feet in potential plans, whether those are needed for Project 11 or ongoing maintenance. There's a detailed plan for how the dredge material sites are going to be managed over the next 50 years.
Okay.
Commissioners, any other questions or comments?
Rick, I'd just like to add that I think Mr. Flores raised some excellent points.
Absolutely.
And I'd just like to see us, and I know we are, but I'd just like to see us to work with him as best we can to accommodate his concerns out there. And I think, he raised some very valid concerns. And
I agree.
He's up for his neighborhood. I appreciate you, Mr. Flores.
Thank you.
And agreed. I just want to second that. And Rick, I like your idea about, you know, talking in the community advisory committee meeting about what's the best way to inform the neighborhood and be a good partner on what's up and coming.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from commissioners? Okay, we have another, I believe our last speaker, Eric, you can correct me if I'm wrong, if I haven't seen your emails, Rick Powers, who is the Executive Director of Citizens Environmental Coalition. Rachel, I see you there. Good morning.
Good morning. So thank you for the opportunity to come and share my comments. And I appreciate the opportunity and your willingness to reach out to the environmental community and frontline communities. I have worked for several government entities, and I've hosted public comment opportunities before, and I know how difficult it can be to put them together often, and time can sometimes be of essence. But I was concerned to find out just yesterday about this meeting and that it had been announced just last week. I think the email went out on the 1st. It's not a lot of notice, especially at the tail end of a holiday. And hopefully this is just an unusual occurrence. I want to make sure that there is adequate opportunity to participate in the process. I will say also that the website did not provide a lot of information about what was going to be discussed. It was kind of buried. You had to find a little tiny plus sign and click on it. And then even then you didn't get a lot of information. So I hope there's a little bit more transparency, and I'm sure that usually there is. And this was just an oversight. And that's really my only comment.
Great. So absolutely, we need to be transparent. And I'm not sure, maybe holidays has something to do with it, but we want to be totally open to the community, and we definitely want to make sure that we're responsive to your needs, and we want to be good partners with you guys, so, and with the whole community. So we're apology for that. If I think that it probably was related to that holidays, and I know there's a lot of conspiracy theory, hope that we should not have any of them at Port Houston. Okay.
I'm not worried about conspiracy.
There you go. About transparency, but not being transparent. We want to be totally open. So any questions or comments, commissioners?
Okay. I would like to make a comment. This is Juan Parras.
I'm sorry, who is this?
This is Juan Parras. I would like to make a comment.
Okay.
Okay. Good to be on this meeting. My name is Juan Parras, and I am the director of Texas Environmental Justice Advocacy Services. And we do a lot of environmental justice work along the Houston Ship Channel. And my question would be, how are you going to address environmental justice communities? Because the expansion actually is going to cause a lot more pollution, like Adrian Shelley was currently saying. And I just want to find out how you're going to try to address EJ communities.
Well, I think the answer is it is a priority. We want to be good environmental stewards, and we understand the issues that are out there in the community, and we're going to do that in a number of different ways. We're going to meet with all of the constituent groups and make sure that the project and how it was approved and the impacts it will have on the community are handled as best as they can. And we want to partner with the environmental groups to make sure that everyone has the right information and that we're having this debate in an open forum. So rest assured that there'll be plenty of meetings and plenty of other forums for your group and all the other groups that spoke today to help us prioritize the investments we're going to make in the environment and try to help us do the best we can with the resources that we have in the community. Roger, any other commissioners want to comment on that?
I agree with that, and we'll continue to work with the groups. I think the commitment to be an environmental steward and recognition of the investments that we need to make, the right investments, those that provide value for the community. And, we'll continue those discussions. That feedback's important. And we'll continue this as this project and future projects occur within the port.
Okay, great. So I don't think we have any other speakers at this point. Thank you for your discussions. Let's move on then to the item F, which is awards and amendment and amendments or change orders, item F1. Roger, you want to talk about this, or Tom?
I think I've got delegated this.
Okay,
just very briefly, this it's a little self-explanatory what it's about. It's for a boundary survey and title work for our Barber's Cut terminal. Just by way of background, it's interesting, I guess, to some of us that property was acquired through numerous transactions. We bought property, we sold property, we bought it back, we sold some. And so beginning almost 70 years ago, and as a result, we've decided at this point through what we know and what we intend to be doing in the future, that it would make sense for us to comprehensively understand the title for the whole site. And it also will help us support future transactions for that site once we do understand it and have a proper property description. So we're asking for the commission to approve that contract.
Okay, Commissioner Zalman.
I so move that we approve it.
Second. Did I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments? I think it's always a good thing to understand what you own. There's no question or comments. Any negative votes? Hearing zero negative votes, item F1 passes. G1, our staff briefing on the project 11. So Roger, are you gonna lead that or Rich?
Yeah, we're gonna just start it off. Rich, you can pull that up and begin the discussion.
Okay, great. Good morning, commissioners. Tim Finley and I are going to co-present this, and as Roger has asked us, we want to make this a discussion, not necessarily a presentation. So to the extent that you have questions and want to stop us, that's absolutely part of the program. Let me just go to the first slide. Hang on one second. Little WebEx. Okay, the agenda real quick is two parts. One is to talk about the sort of the technical and the advocacy aspects of the project. And then the second part will be where Tim steps in and talks a little bit more about the funding options. And I'll take each of these items in turn. So the development since the last dredge task force, there's been a number of dredge task force meetings I think the last one officially might have been December 18 that had minutes. We also updated in April of 19. And then in February of 20, there was a Project 11 update. I don't think it was called a Dredge Task Force meeting. And I think we updated that in April slightly after we achieved the chief's report. You know, it's a complicated slide, but there are really four things going on here. The first is the government milestones indicated by the Corps logos. And the latest one was the chief's report. Then, of course, on December 27th, the bill was signed into law. So as Chairman Campo mentioned, you know, that was a good Christmas present to have. There was a lot of uncertainty around when that would happen. And so we're glad to have that sort of in our rearview mirror. The second are the prior updates, and I won't go into the details, but we've taken these updates from sort of a general orientation to the needs for the ship channel and the market imperatives and why we need to move faster and not take the business as usual approach. Now we are moving to today's update, which is really about the execution plan going forward and then an update on financing. The third set of items on this chart that I want to point out are the major Port Commission approvals that you've made. Some of them were made before some of the commissioners were on the commission, including funding the four-year study back in 2015, which didn't really start the ball rolling. This project was planned the day after Project 10 was finished. And so there were conversations in 2010 and 2012 as well, and then 2015 we funded it, in 2016 we got it going. But also you've given the executive director the negotiation ability to talk with the Corps about the LPP, which was a major conversation and is still going on. And then you've made major commitments in terms of funding to get the project to move faster than the business as usual approach. The fourth set of items in the purple little boxes are really external engagements, and they include industry engagements with a fairly famous meeting downtown in Houston where the CEOs of private industries committed to sharing in the promotion and advocacy for the ship channel project. More recently, we've been having industry days engaging the dredging suppliers to make sure that we've got our ducks lined up for execution, as well as a port webinar that was attended by about 400 attendees. A lot of interest in the future of the port, and we're having an employee update shortly around the 20th of this month, and then we'll have continuing industry days as we get the procurement plan executed. This slide is just basically a little bit of a detail. The Port Commission has continually supported Project 11 through a lot of RCA items, so many that it may be a little bit hard to keep track of. But the bottom line is you've promoted feasibility, accelerating the design, and then now have been approving actions to get ready for implementation, such as the pipeline movements and the designs and the ports portions of those costs. So in total, it's over $50 million that's been put up front. I guess we could say the port is putting its money where its mouth is. So moving on to the actual design, the team has really done a lot of work, and they're burning the candle at both ends. I don't know how many days off they took during the holiday period, but they're pushing this project as fast and as furiously as possible. And the main messages here are in the yellow box, which is really the design team has been sharpening the pencils on costs. Cost estimates for the project are coming down as we get more refined in sort of the dredge template or the cross section and the details around where materials are going to be put into beneficial use areas and so forth. At the same time, we've identified more pipeline challenges that need to be moved. Most of them are in segment 4, a couple in segment 1, And those costs, as we get more detail around where the pipelines actually are and the cost of moving them, they've actually increased. So the overall magnitude of the project is still about $1 billion. And all of this is subject to what the market actually comes back when we get the proposals from the suppliers. On the right side of this slide, I'll just point out that we have targeted getting to 100% design, and this is for segments 1 through 4 by February. Segments 5 and 6 are relegated to sort of the traditional path. They'll be designed later. And the first contract advertisements, we say June on this page, I think it's summer of 2021. One exception to that is we can move forward with Beltway 8 site preparation advertising in January and possibly awarding that in March or April to get ahead of that curve. And all of this, again, is pending federal agreements as well as the scenario and sequencing of different projects. We can do everything all at once with one dredge company, or we can do things in a sequence that makes sense. And that's part of the procurement story, which I'll get to in a second. Speaking of all those approvals that we need to achieve, this slide we've shown a number of times. It's been called our roadmap, and we've been checking the boxes along the way. And between the last update in February and April, we've checked more boxes, including getting WERDA again, and then also preparing for procurement, and then pre-planning for permissions and the federal construction contract agreements. Technically, those are called 204, the permission to construct, and the project partnership agreement, PPA. And those are the only sort of acronym terms I'll try to use today. Continuing letters and meetings and calls to support WERDA, and now we are still on the campaign to get the Assistant Secretary of Army to approve assumption of maintenance, which this is a good project. It's justified economically. The federal government should be stepping up to a responsibility to maintain the project once the port and the local industry builds it. Roger, was there anything you wanted to add on that?
Just that, we continue to have discussions with Assistant Secretary of the Army, and, the Corps' own determination, Corps of Engineers' own determination, even what we agree to do in a locally preferred plan is economically justifiable. So we're continuing to, even though that we're going to obligated to fund that stretch of the channel, we are still pushing to get that authorization that the maintenance of that for the life of that segment is assumed by the federal government. So which is a big number over the life of the project.
I'll just add to that, we have reached out to our congressional delegations to press it on from that perspective too. So we have it being pushed by lots of different folks in lots of different areas to try to get this, done. It's one of those kind of interesting things where, the harbor maintenance fee is, over $100 million a year is collected by the federal government from ships that are entering. They don't collect it on ships that are exiting, only import ships. And traditionally, we've been getting something like 30% of that money back for maintenance. And the rest of it, there's something like $12 billion that's sitting in this trust fund at the federal government, and they're not spending the money. And so the idea that we, after we build and fund the LPP part of it, of the plan, that we have to maintain it when we're not getting even normal maintenance, that is where the funds are being collected for normal maintenance, seems very counterintuitive to me and not very fair. So, but we know how, unfortunately, getting capital allocated out of Washington is not necessarily fair.
Absolutely. Two remaining points on this slide I want to highlight before we move on. One is this New START appropriation. There's multiple pathways that the port can pursue to actually construct this project. One is with a New Start. We get to assign a project partnership agreement, and that's a little bit of an easier tug. And if the New Start is not appropriated, then we have the 204 process where we get permission and we build it. That that can take time to negotiate with headquarters. The good news is that we have a very good team, both in Houston and in Washington, who have been negotiating and pre-drafting these agreements so that they'll be as ready to go as possible once we can get these conversations going. There's a little bit of uncertainty regarding the administration and the transition and who's going to be in place in a few weeks, but you know, we've got our plan in place.
Rich, would you go through the what exactly do you, are the hurdles on a New Start? Is it procedural through the walk through the procedures aspect of it? I know what WERDA was. Passage of Congress, a bill signed by the president, is a New Start designation is not as complicated, or just walk us through what the real procedural aspects is. Who grants that and how?
Yeah, contrary to what a lot of folks understand, the WERDA bill authorizes the project. It doesn't appropriate money for the project. So there's a separate appropriations bill. And in that appropriations bill, since we don't have earmarks, you can't say, here's money for the Houston Ship Channel. You can say, here's a New Start for, major port channel expansions. And the issue is, in the current drafts that we understand, there's one New Start for major port expansion. That means if that is assigned, this is guidance document. So as it's implemented in the federal government in the agencies, if they assign it to a different port, then Houston doesn't get the New Start. And that means the local core doesn't get the work plan money to actually start the project. So we have to start kind of without them. There are complications with how this message is translated through the Office of Management Budget and how the enabling legislation is translated by the Corps of Engineers. And I think we have a number of experts listening in. If we want more detail, I would defer to our legislative experts to walk us through it.
So the New Start is actually already in the bill that it was part of the WERDA bill, and somebody, we have to get that New Start versus somebody else getting that New Start, right?
It's not part of the WERDA bill. It's part of a separate appropriations bill.
Okay. So, but it doesn't, you don't have to get a new appropriation. It's in the existing bill that's already been passed, correct?
I believe so. And if anybody wants to correct me, they should pipe in. But
yeah, I just wanted to get a little more deep granular for the commission on this New Start, because a lot of folks think that, you know, we've got clear sailing, so to speak, at this point. And we just have, as I said earlier, we made a major, hurdle with WERDA, and now we have these other hurdles that we have to go in. Little paths towards the ability to construct, but I think it's important for everyone to understand, you know, exactly what it is, or at least generally what it is.
So, Chairman, with your permission, I see Lowry Crook has put his video on. I think he's one of our experts who can tell us how it works.
Go ahead.
Good morning. And Rich, you're exactly right. So the bill that was the appropriations bill that was combined with WERDA and was signed by the president right after Christmas contains extra money for the Army Corps of Engineers. The Assistant Secretary's office working with OMB allocates that money and then also allocates one of the seven New Starts that the bill gave. The guidance for that bill said that there's one of those signed for a large coastal navigation project. And so we're in competition with other projects for that New Start slot. And they're working to try to put out a work plan where they will allocate that New Start by mid-January.
Thank you, Lowry. I appreciate that.
So if you don't get the New Start, then you go to the 204. correct?
Yes. The 204 is a permission we need with or without the new start. It just works a little bit differently.
If we don't get the new start, there's another pathway, even though the pathway is longer because of a more complicated with the 204 approval, correct?
The new start actually gives the Corps permission to be working on this project. 204 gives us permission to work on the project.
Okay.
Shorthand.
Got it.
The other major point on this slide is really the middle bullet point, the industry commitments to funding. And Tim will talk more about that, but we are on a pathway to get this thing working and digging dirt by summer of 2021. In order to dig dirt, we need to know where the money's gonna come from. The port has, as you've said, Chairman, has committed to its obligations. Industry has given us a proposal that those proposals aren't fully worked out yet. And then we'll talk more about that when Tim steps up.
Okay.
And Rich, might I just add that the process for the 204 has already been initiated by a letter that we've sent to the ASA asking for the acceptance of the 204 in the event that we don't get the New START designation.
Yeah, thank you, Roger, for that update. And in addition, Lowry and others on our team have been working with the Corps to actually draft what that looks like. So, once we get the approval, we're not starting from scratch to write the agreement.
Okay.
And it's a good time to mention Charlie Jenkins and Lori Brownell and the rest of the team are doing all of the heavy lifting. So I'm reporting on a lot of great work by the team. Okay, next slide. This one is a little bit busy and it has to do with our execution plan. You're all familiar that there are six segments to the project that has been translated into 12 contract packages. Up to 9 will be led by the port, depending on whether it's a new start or 204 and so forth, under what we're calling an accelerated construction schedule. And that basically means we're digging dirt this year as opposed to waiting for the business as usual process and annual appropriations, which could take to 2035 to complete the project. The port is doing its homework. Meaning looking at the industry, looking at competing projects, making sure that there will be capacity to get the projects done in a timely fashion. And with all of that homework, we're optimizing, and we have a fairly complex model in draft form that is helping us compare the pros and cons of working with multiple dredgers on multiple projects in multiple timeframes, with the idea being we want to, initiate this project this year and then award most of the contracts within a very quick time frame. To do that, we've reached out to the public and the dredging industry with 2 industry days so far and 1 webinar. We have more, as I said, in the first slide. And really, the main point of this slide is that there's a lot of uncertainty that is still here, and it's in a few buckets. In the bottom of this page, the top 2 dash points are really about the technical translation of the packages into successful methods of procurement and procurement advertisement and awards. The middle 2 are really about working with external partners. The first one, successful negotiation of 204 PPA, the contributed funds agreement, and assumption of maintenance. Those are the items. And we just talked about that. And then the next one is really having a clear understanding of where the money is going to come from and a discussion with industry. And we'd like to have that wrapped up by April of 2021 so that we can stay on the critical path. And then finally, there's some uncertainty, of course, with every major complex procurement in terms of, do we get the pipelines moved in an expeditious fashion? And are we successful with the procurements? And do we get satisfactory proposals at satisfactory prices and with satisfactory conditions in terms of the requirements and the recommendations that TCEQ has provided in terms of incorporating those into our procurement terms?
Hey, Rich, this is Steve Don Carlos.
when we're having discussions with our potential partners, our suppliers, particularly with the dredge companies, are we discussing with them a preference for electric dredges in light of the environmental issues that have been brought up?
We haven't gone to that level of detail yet. We've had electric dredges work in the port. They have to be fairly close to the land, and a lot of the locations for this dredging project won't be conducive to the use of electric dredges. We have looked at the sustainability reports of the dredging community, and we see that they are focused on engine upgrades and hybrid electric technologies and optimizing low sulfur fuels and a number of environmentally friendly and compliant initiatives. So as I think we said in the op-ed, this is a world-class project requiring world-class dredging companies who work across the country and in fact around the world and understand the imperatives that are there. We have not gotten into the level of specifics in terms of seeing proposals from companies yet because we're not at that stage yet.
Yeah, I just thought we're emphasizing that with this project. I think everybody seems to understand the importance of it. I just hope that we emphasize that we really favor doing business with companies that are aware of the environmental impact.
Absolutely, and that has been part of the conversation so far.
If I could add specifically, I think we should make sure that they operate with at least a tier engine, because that really reduces a lot of the emission. And I think all the new dredges being built now are all tier four.
Yes, sir. And as with anything, and I'll talk about the tug industry, which has been mentioned in a few prior meetings.
Right.
Are they all tier one? Are they the dirtiest dredges or the dirtiest tugboats and so forth? All of these companies have been continually upgrading their engines compliant with the EPA guidance.
Correct.
They all have large fleets. Some are older fleets. Some are newer fleets. As you say, they're all building new dredges because they see on this chart, there's a huge uptick in demand over the next 5 years. And so that's part of the picture. You bet. Just turning to the environmental aspects, last December, on December 8th, we provided a pretty extensive environmental update. And those slides are available to the public if they needed them. But regarding Project 11, we did achieve the general conformity determination completion or the finalization of that. There was a 30-day public comment period that ended on the 21st. And then on the 30th, the Corps posted their final determination, which confirms that the project fits within the state implementation plan and fits within federal guidelines. And so the project is compliant, as we had maintained before. We also maintain that the port's aspiration in our strategic plan is to be an environmental leader. I outlined a lot of those initiatives and the 55% reduction in emissions that the port has achieved over the last few years in our meeting last month. But we have been actively listening, and I appreciate the comments from the public appearances today, acknowledging that we're having that dialogue, and we just need to move from general developing a fair understanding to rolling up our sleeves and figuring out what projects we can actually that makes sense for the port. In our last meetings with the Healthy Ports Coalition and the Environmental Defense Fund, the term action team was suggested, which is really, let's put our thinking together and charter a team and figure out what kinds of things we can work together. And this echoes your comments, Chairman, in December and previously about doing the right thing, but also making sure that, you know, the latest idea isn't necessarily implemented or money thrown at it. It's got to make sense and be practical and so forth. So with that, I'll just point out a couple of things we didn't talk about last month, which is there's a lot of conversation about air quality, climate, greenhouse gas reductions across the industry with presidents of business units and large companies, NGOs, academia involved in these conversations. From left to right, you know, the EDF has promoted a stakeholders group, a Houston Ship Channel stakeholders group, and they're focusing on ideas like engine repowers, scheduling of tankers and bonnet technology and so forth. And we're involved in that. And I won't go through the detail in the interest of time, but all of these efforts are, you know, these are practical people focusing on what projects can they put together that can advance an agenda, which frankly has a lot of shared goals around improving environmental quality. And some of them are global and some of them are very local focused. Some are very focused on the Port of Houston area and some are focused on the US and Canada maritime trades, basically the Jones Act plus Canada and so forth. So again, these are, you know, big time companies, big time NGOs, big time universities putting in effort to solve what is really a collective problem. And the port has a role to play. We've been invited to all of these groups because we are seen as a dot connector. You know, I won't belabor it, but with that, I think the next couple of slides will be moving to the financial discussion with Tim. So if there's any other questions, I can take those now.
Yeah, so Rich, and I know Roger, I sent Roger a text on this too. We had a couple of, this is not directly related to Project 11, but Susan Chadwick has in the chat asked a couple of questions related to the Corps of Engineers and some of the Corps of Engineer projects that are out there, and I'll just read them, and I would like Roger and Rich to comment on these. And this is about transparency, right? So if somebody has a chat question, you can go ahead and submit it, and we'll get to them. The question, there are two questions. One is, has Port Houston taken a position or made a comment on the Corps of Engineers interim report for the Buffalo Bio and Tributaries Resiliency Study? And the second one is, does this project, Project 11, does this take into consideration the Corps of Engineers proposed Ike Dike to protect the port from major storm surge and sea level rise? So Roger and Rich, why don't you take number one first and then go to number two?
Okay, I was listening to the second one. Can you repeat the
Rich, first? I think you're closer to the first one. It was, has the Port Houston taken a position or made a comment on the Corps' interim report for the Buffalo Bio and Tributaries Resilience Study?
Okay, yes, we have, and our comment from a port perspective and as a non-federal sponsor of the Ship Channel has been focused on making sure that any efforts at flood control that are on the land side also incorporate sedimentation control, you know, capturing the sediment on the land side, not letting it get into the channel in the first place, avoids a lot of cost and dredging expenses. And we've been working with Harris County and the Corps and the City of Houston on that issue for about 2 years.
You know, and as far as the second question, does the project take into consideration the Corps' proposed Ike Dike to protect the port from a major storm surge and sea level rise? I mean, they are separate projects, separate from one another, but they're definitely complementary. You know, ours complements the other ones, and you know, the Corps has studied and planning both, so they're certainly complementary in projects as they're developed.
Okay, well, why don't we move on to Tim then? Let's go ahead. Thanks.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. Rich, great to be the slide flipper for me, Rich. Thank you.
You bet. Just tell me when.
When? The first slide really is just intended as a quick primer, or perhaps a reminder of the historically the two capital funding models we've used for the Ship Channel and Port Houston. On the left being Harris County ad valorem geo bonds, and differentiating from the right, which are port cash flow resources generated from port operations. So beginning there on the left, as noted, since 1911, there's been just over $1 billion of par value issued in geo bonds associated, of course, with Houston Ship Channel development, associated with the public terminals, as well as some local county projects throughout the year. There are currently just over $500 million of bonds outstanding. That's par value of bonds outstanding today of GO bonds. And again, as this body is fully aware, we talk about it each year with regards to the budget, around $60 million in annual debt service from property taxes are used exclusively to service that debt that sits on our balance sheet is, of course, coming from the Harris County taxpayers. As noted in the final bullet there, the last bond issue, geo bond issue, was in 2007 for around $250 million, and that has been fully expended as of 2014. And that differentiates from the right, that rather
complex. Tim, before you talk about the right, let me make a comment about geo bonds means, for those of you who aren't don't have the acronyms now, they mean government obligation bonds, right? And so that the Harris County taxpayers are on the hook for that $549 million. The idea behind Harris County taxpayers funding projects for the public terminals and for some of the channel over the years, the idea was obvious, or the idea behind the government funding it is that it's for the greater good. It's for about investing in the infrastructure and investing in the infrastructure, both on the land and on the water to produce jobs in the region. And we know that this has been a really good investment by the government. And, you know, when you invest in infrastructure and you create jobs, that creates income, which allows people to pay property taxes, right? And so the idea behind the government issue bonds made a lot of sense from 1911 to 2007. And what's happened then is those investments are paying off big time in the form of jobs and in the form of generating cash flow from those investments on the next part of the slide, which is the Port Houston cash flow. And hopefully the way these programs work is that once the government funding is in place via the tax-backed bonds, then the port gets to stand on its own and gets to be able to generate cash flow to be able to, you know, to make investments over time. And I think that's the sort of idea behind the two separate groups. It's not just always go to government bonds because they're there. You do have to get a vote. You know, you have to go to the taxpayers and ask them to approve them. And the taxpayers have approved 1.1 billion because it made sense. And now the port I'll let Tim go through the port side of the equation. But I just think it's really important to understand the difference between and the motivation between which sources of funds that we use and why they were used in the past versus what we might be projecting in the future. Okay, Tim.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chairman. That's right. And now we, as good stewards, you see the dotted line passing over there to PH capacity, Port Houston capacity. Now we maintain and administer those assets so that this cycle begins on the right. What you see here from a dollar perspective is in capturing, consolidating, if you will, about 11 years, 2010 through 2020 specifically. So, again, really, we'll begin with the capacity that's put in place. Again, some of that startup money clearly coming from the GO bonds, as Rick was mentioning. We, in turn, use those assets and via tariffs and other revenue streams paid by our customers is revenue incoming to the Port Authority. Then each year, of course, the Port Commission approves our operating budget and those expenses. The net of those two numbers is our cash flow, including, by the way, I'll add grant monies that flow in from state and federal entities. So over that 10-year period, you can see on the screen there, we've generated roughly $1.3 billion in cash flow. Those monies, of course, are reinvested right back into the cycle, be that Houston Ship Channel projects, as well as, again, continuing the redevelopment, if not the development of Port Houston capacity. So today, in a self-sustaining mode, of course, is our intent. And we can see good, as you'll see on the next slide, you'll see good visibility into maintaining our assets and our ability to help fund Project 11 as well. So again, a reminder of those two funding models. I'll move on unless there are questions.
Commissioners? It's really good slide. Really good slide showing how one page, from 1911 to 2020, how the world has changed, and how investments approved by the citizens of Harris County and Harris County Commissioner's Court have allowed this cash flow and have promoted this kind of cash flow, because we know that that our expenses are somebody else's revenue, and that revenue pays for jobs, just like our revenue does. So it's a good slide. Go ahead.
Good. Thank you. All right. The next slide, admittedly, a little bit busy. I'll just point out a few highlights as we go through. Let me lay the groundwork, if you will, first. I do want to say that this information was compiled with the help of our financial advisor, PFM, or Public Financial Management, who are aligned with us today. We appreciate all of their support. Though obviously cost estimates, schedules continue to evolve, as Rich spoke of. Of course, we need to begin that process of putting the infrastructure, the financing infrastructure in place now, such that when our responsibilities come due, we're ready to fund those. So a tremendous amount of work is happening, as you would imagine, behind the scenes. Lastly, as reflected on the slide here, this is pro forma sort of estimates, if you will, of that $1 billion project that Rich just talked about. And we're assuming roughly 50% or half a billion dollar financing requirement on the Port Authority through that. So the slides that you see here really comprehend that. Again, pro forma estimates, but we have to start working, as Rick and Wendy know, certainly related to all the work that goes into getting the financing arranged. So top left is a simple high level view of liquidity over the 10-year period. Now we're casting forward in 2030. We'll begin this year with around $372 million in cash available for funding and liquidity. Over that 10-year period, we anticipate generating around $2 billion, including grant funds to support projects. We will fund our own Port Houston CapEx needs over that 10-year period. And now you begin to see the introduction of debt service on the bonds we'll talk about in a few minutes. A reminder, this is 10 years. So over this 10-year look forward period, that's around $249 million. Leaving us, which is the bottom line of the top left quadrant, leaving us in a position, a solid position, of projected around $165 million. You have to quickly say that this is based on many assumptions and withholding, volumes, a moderate economic growth over the next 10 years, 5 years of which, of course, the commission saw in our budget overview this past November. So the top left is simply intended to give you that view of overall cash-based liquidity over 10 years, look forward, assuming we issue in this context around $500 million in debt, which is the top right quadrant. Again, not a lot of numbers, forgive me, but if you look about midway down, project fund line, that's the one that accumulates in this context to about $494 million of issuance. You can see just down there under debt service and cumulative, by the time we issue all the debt in this timeline by 2023, that would be around $28 or $29 million annually of debt service to fund debt service on the bond on the project. all-in TIC, all-in true interest cost, as you can see, hovering just over 3 to 3.5 points. We think, again, based on where we sit today, what we know of financial markets and projecting those into the future, how we anticipate the cost of this capital for the Port Authority.
Tim, what kind of bond rating do you think from the rating agency?
That's coming on the left, so I'll talk to that now, and that will end up in the conversation on the lower left quadrant. Right now, again, a very strong credit rating we anticipate, given some of the metrics you see there. One dimension of the credit ratings, of course, on the lower left, we're anticipating a AA rating on that debt. Again, we'll have to work very hard to attract that and maintain that, as you know, Chairman. But along the left, you see the various rating agency metrics. You know, consider those sort of the credit risk, the profile, that investors and ratings agencies would look at to gauge the quality of our debt. And you can see certainly the top two more heavily weighted metrics around debt service coverage and debt to net revenues ranking as an extremely strong, quote unquote, category. Then you get into days cash on hand, unrestricted reserves, et cetera, ranging from strong to adequate. I'll remind you, this is at full issuance. In other words, this is out in 2024, 2025. The numbers, of course, gyrate around a bit as we line there. But this will be something very clearly as part of our debt management policy and debt management modeling that we will continue to work over time. On the lower right-hand side, a very high-level calendar, again, all contingent on the schedule assumptions that Rich talked through earlier. But you can see there a few of the high-level bullets. If that schedule were to hold, you could see that sometime next month, or perhaps the commission meeting, of course, we would bring forward the request to approve the financing arrangements. We'll bring forward the underwriting and legal teams for your approval. And depending on how the bonds, of course, are categorized, the need for a TIFRA hearing as appropriate. And then you see transitioning ultimately to a pricing and closing in June, and that would be to fund a July, August award date for the first pieces of the project. Again, all subject to change, but again, we have to begin our planning now and have those pieces in place in order to hit the various timelines. So a lot of information on the slide, forgive me, but very important information to try to condense and to give you a sense of where we are with, again, financing the Port Authority's portion of the project. I'll pause there, Chairman or Commissioners, if there are any questions.
Commissioners, any questions about this?
Oh, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Clyde, I'd just like to make a comment. When you was discussing the GO bonds a while ago, you know, I think you made a very good point about how it all started and what it's meant. I just want to say that I lived through two of those bond issues, and they wasn't as hard as we all thought they would be to get. I remember one time there was four or five bond issues, and the Port Authority was the only one that was approved. And it's because of the jobs and the economic benefit that we bring to the community. I just want to say that I wouldn't want us to close the door on GO bonds if down the road we need them. I think you're right. We can do things now, but I wouldn't want to close the door that that's not an option somewhere if we have to have it.
I agree. I think financial flexibility is absolutely paramount in an organization like this. Okay. And so, obviously that if you look at that green line, the reason this works is because of that cash flow, the green line on the left, the left-hand top box. And if that $2.85 billion changes dramatically, then, and we need to make investments that generate where we can generate funds for the port and investments that create more jobs, and we don't have the capacity to do it, then you go to the GO bonds. But I think today The good news is you know, if you get a double A rating, which is one of the best ratings you can get, and that shows the strength of the port. It shows the ability of the port to finance on its own balance sheet this kind of money, and that's the financial flexibility that I think that the county commissioners and the taxpayers of Harris County invested $1 billion to get. And so, and to the extent that we can figure out how to drive revenue and drive job growth, if we can't do it on our own balance sheet, then we need to go ask Harris County taxpayers to fund it. And I agree with that totally. But right now, you know, good news is we can do it without asking.
Right. Yeah. I just wanted to make that point.
I agree. Look, you never limit your financial flexibility ever, because you never know what's going to happen. The world changes. Look what happened. We all thought that 2020 was going to be, you know, our banner year, and then all of a sudden in March something weird happened.
Yeah, well,
financial flexibility gives you the ability to you know, deal with issues that you don't anticipate. And so
the only thing, and I know Roger is doesn't feel this way, but I have a little bit of concern as we go forward with the dredging, whether it's going to slow down our business and our revenues. I hope that don't happen, but we never know what tomorrow will bring.
Right. Well, I will tell you that when I looked at this schedule, and I did my own due diligence on the Port Authority when I was asked to be the chair, and I will tell you that this Port Authority, because of the financial stewardship that you guys have done, and Clyde, I know you've been here, 8-9 years now, something like that. And you know, you guys have, the previous commissioners have done an amazing job of creating this financial flexibility, and the team, Roger and his team, you know, Tim, creating this financial flexibility for us is unprecedented. And I would put this balance sheet and this cash flow up against any port in America today. And I know we're number one port in America based on the Corps of Engineers analysis, but I bet if you put the financials side by side, we'd be the number one port in financial strength as well. And that didn't happen overnight. That happened with a lot of hard work and a lot of diligence on the past commissioners and the team you know, at Port Houston. So financial flexibility is key. Never close an opportunity to use a you know, financial instrument if you need it. But today, you know, we'll be able to say, look, we're a AA rated credit, and we can raise $500 million to create jobs for the region without asking the taxpayers to pay. And so I think that's something that we should be really proud of, and something that will probably get a fair amount of press in the future, I would think. But with that said, never close on your ability to have financial flexibility.
I agree with you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to say again, thank Rich and Tim and Charles for all the hard work they've done. Looks like they've been working very hard trying to get us where we need to be. And I just want to recognize them for the job they've done.
Thanks, Chef. All right, let's talk about the industry.
All right, I'll not spend much time on this chart, as really it relays no net new information to you. Remember, on the top half, of course, just over a year ago, I believe, we brought the list of options, if you will, that were available for industry funding participation. As of today, per our conversation just concluded, you know, given where we are from a financial sustainability perspective, financial position, I believe ad valorem tax supported bonds should be on the table for Project 11. And additionally, Port Houston funding the entire accelerated project on its balance sheet, I believe, is off the table as well, as per prior Port Commission meetings. So those were the options, again, that I believe you received information for directly. Other direct funding mechanisms is admittedly a very broad category, just implying in brief, you know, checks or other sort of entity outside of the Port of Houston funding directly the industry portion for the project. And as you also know, on the lower half, again, in February, I believe, of last year, the coalition, specifically Mr. DiCosimo, and I believe Vincent is on the line with us today, proposed a user fee concept is illustrated very high level in these four bullets. I don't have an update on that, but it is my understanding that the coalition and industry reps are currently engaged on refining and working and reworking their proposal. And we hope to hear more specifics from them soon and bring back to this body for a timely conclusion to that.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is that clearly the industry has spoken and said they would pay for half of the channel cost to be channel widening and deepening cost. And many times the question of how it gets done is obviously complicated. And I do appreciate Vincent DiCosimo's and as the executive director of the Coalition for Fair and Open Point, working really hard on these programs. It's not an easy thing to get industry to dig into their pocket. We do know that we need to make sure that the cost of entering and exiting the port is efficient and it's not a detriment to future business. And so that's part of the equation that we need to work through. And we need to, I know that I think I saw on the schedule that we need to get this done by the 1st of April to be able to make sure that we move this project along, because ultimately the industry proposal needs to be completed. And the reason it needs to be completed is that to accelerate the deepening and widening, that's why the industry needs to come to the table. And if we can't figure out a way to do it that is efficient and gets all of the people at the table to agree, then the project will be business as usual, which is not a good option. So for lots of players in the channel. So I do appreciate their innovative concepts, and we just need to keep working towards a solution that works, taking all the different folks into consideration. Raji, you want to comment on that at all?
Yeah, those discussions are still ongoing. Again, Vincent is leading that charge with the industry. Several meetings have occurred recently, and we're certainly a part of that as well. And still user fee based is what they're talking about now. Not much different than what the last time we got together in person as a port commission meeting in February, except for the debt is not on port balance sheets or what, and they're looking for another form of debt in which to finance this. So the key to all this, and it's been mentioned again and again, but as we get closer to pulling the trigger and going forward with advertising construction, we need to have a deadline. We need to have a solution of what the contribution is going to be from the private sector so that we know what the schedule and how this project can be expedited. Again, Rick, as you said, channel's going to get built. It's just how quickly it gets built is determined on what type of private funding is available. Another thing, too, that they're having to discuss and community feedback on is the federal law requirements for a user fee based type of arrangement to support navigational projects. So that's all in the works, and I would think, not speaking on behalf of Vincent, but he will have a proposal. Hopefully the industry will have something to propose on how we move forward that in the near future.
Roger, the user fee concept basically strikes me as a reimbursement for money that's already spent. So where would the initial money come from? Is the industry going to put it up and then get repaid through user fees, or what?
Yeah, basically that's the way it's going to be set up.
Okay, should they not administer their own program, rather than the Port of Houston incurring the expense and hassle of having to administer it?
Well, I think that all needs to be part of the discussion. It has been part of the discussion as the group, Commissioner. But you know, there's a lot of things still out there that need to be finalized.
Yeah, the idea that there's a user fee, the port has to be involved because of that, because the port is the mechanism that allows the user fee to be charged under federal law. So there's no way we can't be involved in it. And I think we need to be involved in it. And so, you know, I think their proposals are innovative, but again, you have folks, some folks that don't want to increase the cost of transit in the channel. And so those folks have a pretty loud voice, and we just need to make sure we get everybody on the same page. And it's all about how fast can you build the channel, right? And so, but I don't think that the industry can do it without the port being involved, because it is federal law that allows the port authority to charge this fee. And we've been very clear that we will not use the port's balance sheet to incur our balance sheet for this fee. And so they have proposed some innovative ways to finance it using a potential future fee. Now, the cost of that is one of the sort of complicating issues, because it's clearly a future fee, assuming that it gets completed and it complies with federal law and industry supports it, ultimately doesn't have the same kind of financial strength as the port, and it's going to cost more money to do that. That's all. And it's just more of a, you know, higher interest rate and higher cost scenario. But as long as it's supported by your user fee and it doesn't impact the port's balance sheet, then I think we're fine working with the industry on a structure like that.
Well, we just don't want to cut our nose off to spite our face. If we are not very, very careful, I think, with the user fee, then it's going to cost us business, which kind of defeats the purpose of this exercise anyway.
That's an absolute consideration. There's no question. That's when I say industry support, I mean shippers and, you know, the people that the 200 plus, you know, facilities along the channel need to get in the room and say, this fee is reasonable and it's not going to stop business. We don't want to be a high cost port that pushes cargo, whatever it is, you know, either energy or containers to other ports, for sure. And so that's an absolute consideration that we need to understand, and we need to make sure that we are an efficient and cost-effective port to do business in.
In the meantime, I'm assuming that we are comfortable that we have or can get the monies at least necessary to build the segments that will actually benefit our facilities. Is that correct?
Yes. Any other comments?
Well, those just add to that. Those are the segments that you know, everyone comes through the Bay Reach, so that the benefit is to the entire ship channel for those
right.
those Bay Reach segments.
Sure.
Commissioners, any other questions or comments about industry proposal? Okay, Tim, what do you got left?
Really nothing of substance. We just went through, Richard is still there. Of course, the first two bullets are blocking and tackling that will be ongoing in the next few months. And then again, the April 1st point, which you raised, Chairman, on the calendar, just gives us a deadline, if you will, to get that alignment with industry on that funding mechanism. So
okay.
That really concludes the materials.
Questions, comments?
I have a
question. Go ahead. Okay.
Isn't this just a method whereby the Port of Houston would put a fee on incoming boats, wouldn't be on anything on the outgoing boat? Isn't that right? So basically, we're in essence funding it ourselves.
No, I don't think that's correct, Commissioner. I think that it's on all transit.
Coming and going.
Yes. But I believe that's correct. And then there's a lot of technical federal law issues that are involved in how the fee is, what the amount of the fee is, and how it's applied, and there's a lot of technical federal law that we have to comply with, and it's really very detailed, and I think part of the challenge is that I don't think there's been a port that actually used this user fee to reimburse for this, and so we are kind of plowing new ground to a certain extent. I know that there are some trying to use this mechanism at this point, but there, Roger, you might chime in on that, but haven't really done it yet.
Yeah, I mean, it all stems around, you know, it can't be based upon the cargo tonnage, for instance. Fees can't lawfully be based upon that. They have to be tailored to, you know, the benefit of the ships that are calling the channel and whether, you know, their benefit to the, you know, improvements that were made, you know, whether or not those ships benefits. There's a whole list of federal statutes that determine what fees are allowed to be charged or, you know, by the federal law. So
let me just also add, Commissioner Meese, that distinction you made is really just for the harbor maintenance tax. That doesn't apply in this situation. The statute's pretty specific about it being able to impose both entering and departing. So.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments, commissioners? Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and then go into executive session, I believe is our next item. Am I correct, Roger? Yep. So we're going to go to item H. So Eric, do you need to read some executive session stuff?
I sure do. It's now 12:01 PM.
The Port Commission. Switch over or stay on this.
We're not going to stay on this. We're going to, the commissioners will exit this. You'll leave this. And then there was, Kelly sent another, you know, link that gets you into the executive session.
Right. Thank you.
Right. Yes. So let me go on. Yeah. The Port Commission of Port Eastern Authority of Harris County, Texas will convene in a closed meeting as permitted by the Texas Open Meeting Act and Duff Government Code to conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultation regarding 33 USCA 5B and 2236, deliberate regarding real estate, including disposition of Barber's Cut and Beltway 8 vicinity properties, economic development, negotiations, incentives, employment evaluation of public employees, including deliberation regarding amendment to the employment agreement, the executive director of the Port Authority, and security related matters. The Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Okay, so me and Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority at 12:40 Central Time. We have a quorum. I forgot who was supposed to make a motion. Is that Dean? Are you making the motion?
He sent the motion to Clyde.
Clyde, okay, Clyde.
I did.
I don't have the motion.
I don't have it.
I sent it to you, Dean. I don't have it.
Let me check my email again.
I'll send it to you, Clyde. I'll read it. Go ahead, Kenny. Would you read the motion and let somebody?
You bet.
Yeah, there you go.
Motion is: I move that the Port Authority amend its employment agreement with Roger Gunther on the terms discussed in executive session, and authorize the Chairman and General Counsel to do any and all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
So move.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. I also understand that Commissioner Creuzot has joined, so we have a full commission. Are there any questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, are there any negative votes on the motion? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, I appreciate it. We are now going to adjourn the meeting. Commissioners, any questions or any comments you want to have in a lasting at the end of the meeting? Okay, hearing none, we're going to adjourn the meeting. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
And second, any negative votes? Okay, the meeting's adjourned. We'll see you all next Port Commission meeting, which is the end of the month. So,
yeah.
End of the month. So thank you, and we'll see you guys later. Take care.